Hello and welcome to the Democracy In podcast, hosted by me, Mary Layton. It feels like democracy is imploding in the US, but what are the alternatives? Does the US really deserve the title of the world's greatest democracy? In this podcast, we look at the alternatives. We explore the good, the bad, and the nonsensical side of different democratic systems around the world. This is the second of three episodes devoted to Mexico, where I'm joined by my guests, Brenda Lopez and David Palmer. Okay, well, let's move on slightly. I want to talk about the actual act of voting itself, because I get super nerdy about the actual technology that you use and what is the process, because from my experience, you know, I voted in the UK, I've now voted in the US, but I've also seen elections happening in Bolivia and in Chile, and just the way that people actually vote and what they do on the day is super interesting to me, because it's not something you can usually find out about from the outside. So tell me a little bit about, let's start with, who is able to vote, both officially and unofficially. Is voting compulsory? Is it actually easy for people to vote?
Let's do the first question. Anyone older than 18 years old, Mexican citizen, can vote and has the right to vote.
Okay.
So that's, I would say, the very direct and straight answer to that.
I was going to say, can you vote if you're a felon, for instance?
I don't know if that's a requirement. Mm. But the tricky part when it gets hard is like, yes, you can vote, but everyone is not like in the US that you can vote with an ID. You don't even show your ID in the US. Mm-hmm. In Mexico, you need a special electoral ID. So it's your ID that will allow you to vote.
Okay.
And that ID is a big process to get. It's harder than getting a passport. And I tell you, because I was trying to get that ID. It took me 3 years, just because there was not enough time for me to get it every time I went to Mexico City.
Oh my goodness.
I had to get it through the consulate here in the US.
Mm.
But that process for me was very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because it's lengthy, and that's where they do all the background work about if you are probably a felon, if you are really, you have to show your birth certificate, you have to prove your fingerprints, you have to get the pictures. The process, they have specific cameras to take your picture for biometric information. The ID is like, it has different non-violatable, you cannot fake it.
That's so incredible. That's a lot. I've never heard of having such a complex ID to vote. Do you use it for anything else or just for voting?
Go ahead, David.
You use it for everything. It's like
So it's not EID. Just to vote. Okay.
But they start asking for that, because then they are like, your driver's license became irrelevant.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for example, if you're buying a cell phone plan, you have to show that ID.
Okay.
If you're going into a club, you have to show that ID. If you get any document from the government, you have to show that ID. It's used for everything.
Okay, so it isn't just, because I was thinking as you were describing it that it was only for voting, and I was thinking, why would anyone bother? But if you have to use it for everything and also for voting, that kind of makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the causality is the other way around. Like in the 90s, they make this reform to form the National Electorate Institute, because previously the elections were organized by the Secretaría de Gobernación, which is like the Ministry of State or something like that. And there were a lot of frauds committed in elections by the PRI, like they will get
dead people voted.
The voting. Yeah, or dead people voted. Yeah, exactly.
I see. So that really did happen. It wasn't just like an accusation.
No, it happened. And then when they form the National Electoral Institute, they also make the ID for voting. And it said, I don't know if it's currently, but it was said to be the safest ID for elections in the world.
So is it something that, okay, it sounds like it's difficult for Mexicans living abroad to get that ID. Is it something that's barriers for people within the country as well? Presumably if you don't have good documentation, right?
Yeah, probably, because you have to get, like, I went to get mine renewed like a month ago. And you have to get like a paper where it says where you live, and it has to be current. I bought like a water utility receipt that it was like 3 months old, and they didn't accept that. And you have to get your birth certificate, and it has to be up to date as well. And as Brenda was saying, that they make you not pass, but like register all your how do you call them? Like the fingerprint and
Yeah,
your
biometrics.
biometrics.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. And they take a picture, and it's really complicated.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
It's not that complicated, but you have to have the documents, and they give it to me like in a week. But it's really expensive for the state to make that ID.
Well, for me, the problem was that you have to go pick it in person. Like, it
Yeah.
cannot be given or handed to anyone else, but just to the person
In
who's
person,
the ID. So, do you have to register to vote, or is the act of getting this ID a way that you're being registered to vote? Yes, and
Yeah,
that is
okay.
corresponding to your district where you live. Basically, that ID will where the electoral casillas. How do you say the casilla electoral?
Ballots?
No, the casilla electoral, like where you're supposed to vote, like that
Oh,
specific
polling place.
location, your polling
Your
place.
polling location, yeah.
Yeah, so that it determines where you are voting, basically.
Okay,
So they will publish it and tell you
So
where.
I'm already seeing a great comparison with the UK where you are on the electoral register, you're automatically put on it, they send you a piece of paper saying, "Hey, go vote," and you just turn up at a location and walk in and say, "Hi, my name is Mary. Can I vote, please?" And they cross you off on the
Yes.
list, right? So this is much more, and it sounds like much more secure, but the security was implemented in response to a real problem of corruption.
Electrons, yeah.
So, given that it's such a pain in the butt to get this thing, does that give people more security? And trust that there isn't the same level of corruption that there used to be.
I think now the issue is also digital technology. Like, now because the corruption maybe doesn't happen at the in-person level, now the claims are that the corruption happens in the software level.
Oh, okay.
Like,
So let's do that then. Are you voting electronically?
no,
Oh,
everything is
okay.
in person,
Okay,
but
okay.
what the all the data is scanned and pass goes through the machines, the computers, the servers. So now what is claimed is that the corruption is happening basically at the server level
I
where
see.
somebody is hacking the data and trans, but I mean, there's no evidence of that, not to my knowledge, but that's what they
That's
claim
the fear.
about some elections in the past. But going a little bit back to the process of the how do you vote, there's one more detail that
Go
is
for
important. I would like to talk about it.
it. Please go
That
ahead.
when you go to the polling place, you have to show your ID. And of course, at the place, there are people from each representing each one of those party, making sure that you're in the list. They
Okay.
verify your ID, and they put an ink that stays in your finger 24 hours,
Yeah.
so you cannot vote twice.
Right, so you get the thumbprint thing.
Exactly,
Interesting.
and that's a way to guarantee that people used to vote twice or more than once without the ID. But now it's like, even if you have your ID, you also have to prove that your finger is clean in order
Show
to
your thumb.
vote.
Well, this is interesting because you have both a really complicated piece of paper, but also you have the very basic like marking your body to show that you can't vote twice. But that's really cool. But let's go to this thing. So, okay, you turn up, you get a piece of paper. Is this right?
Yes.
So you have like your list of candidates and you make a little mark. Is that right? Yeah. And then Brenda, you're saying they take that piece of paper and scan it through a machine. Is that correct?
No, what they happen is like within your electoral constraint area or your
Polling
polling
station.
area, polling station, everything is sorted and kind of like counted by hand, but then reported, the numbers are reported in a data that is confirmed, and like everyone agrees to that.
And
So they give
who counts the votes? Who's the person counting them?
whoever is supporting all these parties, they have like a witness, they have somebody looking at the ballot telling, okay, one for A. And when things cannot be counted as a vote, they say it's a null vote, and then somebody verifies and they say, yeah, it's null. So they all agree on that. So it's not a single person, it's everyone representing all of the
I
interested
see.
parties.
Interesting.
Yeah, the parties have representatives on the voting places, but also the counting and all the process is made by citizens. Like they made a sorteo, how do you say that?
Raffle or
a raffle
no?
every time that there's going to be an election, and maybe I will get elected in that raffle in certain election, and I will be like the president of the polling place.
So you're required, but you're told ahead of time that you are randomly selected to be the counter of that area.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom's house was a polling place.
Oh, yeah. Really?
A polling place for since I remember.
Her house? Her personal house?
Her house, yeah.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
They ask all the some of the houses that are fit to
have
it.
Large enough. Yeah.
Yeah, they ask them if they have a garage or a patio to have the equipment.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, also my mom's place was a boarding place for
Yeah, exactly. That's so cool, yeah.
And now we're millennials, we don't have houses large enough in order
yeah,
to be polling
exactly. But the interesting part is that also was like a security measure to ensure that the parties didn't count the votes for them.
Yeah.
Because if I'm counting the votes, and I have done that in the past, like you end up to 1 a.m. and you as a citizen have to take the poll to the district where they are going to store it.
But so it's random, yeah. So you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's super.
Well, they have like the raffle is by letter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In the next election, they say letters from P to W are going to be raffled. So you kind of know that you could get selected.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to do it, you don't have
it.
To.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got they're being counted by these randomly selected citizens who have a bunch of people from different political parties looking over their shoulder. They count all the votes. Then they send them electronically. And that's where you say, Brenda, people get... Nope. Okay.
No, they don't sell anything. Everything at this time is still pieces in paper, pencil and paper. They have specific materials. You have to use only the materials provided.
Yeah.
You cannot use anything like my pen at home, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But after that, everything gets sealed with specific tape.
Uh-huh.
And it's brought to bigger electoral like
location.
I don't know if it's something local, and then the local aggregates everything and brings it to the larger space. And everything, I think the system is the same. Every time you move things or like this kind of important boxes or the urnas, they are always supervised by multiple people. And then every time it's transferred to a different hand, there's also different people representing different interests and like citizens.
Yeah.
But then at some point it goes to the digital, everything gets captured.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the claim, because that the main reason, like David said, for the federal election, IFE, Instituto Federal Electoral, was to add a little bit of transparency and also become independent from the government.
Mm.
But that was also the main reason. But then after they started doing this, the claims were like...
Right. There's always, it sounds like, unless everything is completely out in like physical public space where actual physical people can stand and observe it, there's always this sense that there's something that can be mistrust.
Look at these elections with Trump, right? It's
well,
also
this is
kind
the
of
thing,
the same.
Right? But this is like, I think in the US, there has been for a really long time a total lack of transparency, but no one was worried about it until recently. Mm-hmm. I used to always be amazed that there would always be these articles on the internet about, hey, look, we got a bunch of, you know, 12-year-olds. We taught them how to code and they hacked into a voting machine. Doesn't anyone care about this? I mean, I was reading stuff about that 10 years ago. And now there are attacks on the legitimacy of voting in the US and people calling it into doubt. And on the one hand, it's obviously all made up. But on the other hand, the US system of voting is deeply insecure. But no one seemed to bother about it. But what's interesting to me is there are all these layers of like really deeply paranoid security built into what you're describing in the Mexican system. but it's for a good reason, because in the past there was a lot of corruption, and it's about trying to make it more transparent. But it turns out people don't really trust anything than really, like, you still have to show a piece of ink on your thumb. Like, you still have to physically have somebody standing there looking over the shoulder while every vote is counted, which ultimately sounds more secure than sending it through.
Well, I have to say, I think the system, when I voted here in the US, I did vote in Chicago, and I already did an election here in California.
Yeah.
I am really surprised how, like, basically they sent me a piece of paper and I had to sign it because I was going out for on a trip. But I basically asked my partner, can you fill it for me and just submit it?
Yeah.
And it's all by mail. It's not legal because I had, like, you know, it's on my... I don't know if it's illegal or not, so please don't publish this.
We won't tell. I'm not going to edit this out, Brenda. This is too good. But
but the difference between, like, being able to... it's basically, yes, my choice, but somebody was helping me to do
fill
this. Because I had, like, a proxy, basically.
Yes, you had a proxy.
And,
yeah.
But it was just like, okay, I cannot submit it because I'm out of the country. Please make sure it's sent.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the fact that there's no... nobody requires anything after they receive this piece of paper, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I found the US one. I've only voted once in a presidential election. Sorry, David, we're just describing this for you. But it's relevant to this, like, comparison, right?
No, and it's surprising for me to hear how you do it.
Well, it felt so... I fill in this thing and I hand it to somebody and it disappears into a machine, and apparently then I trust it, like, having read all this stuff on the internet about how old these machines are and how easy to hack they are. And it's interesting that it's the moment that the computer enters the system that people stop trusting it here in Mexico.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true. I didn't think about it that way, but it's very true.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, in the recent elections, David, maybe you are more familiar, if the process has changed, because the last time I voted in Mexico was, it has been a while, I think, before these presidential ones.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to vote in the previous minor election that happened last year, but I didn't have my ID with me.
Yeah. No, I think it's really similar, still like the way we have been describing it. There have been really silly discussions about something that you were saying, Brenda, about the pen that you can use to vote.
Right.
For example, before the last presidential election, you have to use these special crayons that they supposedly don't erase or something like that.
Huh.
But then people started complaining about it because some people started saying that they're going to be erased with heat and etc. But then I remember in the last couple of elections, you are now able to use whatever pen you like. But off the top of my head, nothing else.
But that shows a concern for me. People are concerned about these kind of details and thinking about them. And their concern about it and, you know, raising a fuss about it changes things. It's not like you just complain into the void. Nothing happens, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
and also, like, to say another really, really big issue about elections in Mexico, also about security and about narco traffic being present in all the elections, and stories known about election places sometimes are not able to install in some places because they are not safe to do it. And also, like, narcotraffic and criminals doing bad things to the election places. So it's another thing to consider, like, how can we talk about Mexico being in a democracy if you don't have your basic right to walk freely in all the country secured, for example, and also to vote securely? That's another big issue in Mexico.
I think this is really important. So let's pivot to this a little bit, because it sounds like we've been talking mostly about Mexico City. But I think you're raising a really important point, David, that in other parts of the country, by the sounds of it, it's not just the security of, like, can you see, do you trust the pencils? It's the security of, will you survive if you go and vote, right? So if you could talk a little bit more about that, that would be, and give us a bit more context to that, that would be really interesting.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Electoral Institute is really good at making sure that they place election places in safe neighborhoods and areas. But sometimes we heard in the news about some percentage of electoral places not being able to install because of security reasons,
Mm.
or in some electoral place they stole the ballots or something like that. So it's a thing because you know that a lot of territory in Mexico, especially in the north of the country, is controlled by the narcos. So it's a thing to take into consideration because if you cannot vote, what's the point, right?
And that extends somehow to sometimes they you cannot even run to be elected because of
Right.
the same kind of threats that they pose into whoever wants to lead that area, right? Like sometimes people don't even dare to say they want to represent anyone because there's like a either you are trying to save your life or trying to do something for society, but it's difficult in those areas.
Yeah, and also in larger terms, like you know that, for example, in democracy indexes around the world, they take into account also, for example, like free of speech. And in Mexico, if a reporter, a news correspondent, isn't able to do her work, and there are a lot of journalists that are killed in Mexico every year. So how can you report on news, and how can we have free of speech in a country that journalists are killed every day? So that's also a question, and in terms of security and all the things that make a democracy.
I think this is a really important point because obviously democracy is more than just going out and voting every couple of years, right? And we've brought up the issue of both journalism and narco traffickers in Mexico. Like, as a really naive, dumb question, like, the narco traffickers care who gets elected, right? Do they support particular parties? What is the stakes for them in disrupting an election or even being involved at all in an election?
There's a lot. There's a lot. They control the areas, right? Like, so they basically they don't want any threats. They don't want anyone who will come and change the laws, so they cannot continue, or they don't want to be interrupted with their tasks. So if you are somebody who are opposed to that type of, and you promise that you will implement laws and you will stop narco trafficking, then definitely you are guaranteed that you will not get to even the election, the point where you will be elected, because there's a lot of candidates who were they died in the process because they wanted to stop narco trafficking, they want to stop any kind of corruption, because there's and that's one of the biggest problems I think too, is that there's the relationship between these cartels and the government is very strong, and it's not that the government wants this to happen, but there's a big threat also from the cartels to sustain this. So the threats are at some lower levels, like in smaller areas or towns in the north or Michoacán or all of these states that have a big cartel presence. And I think it's their interests are basically don't mess with me, but if you are in government and you want to do good government and you want to protect your people, then that's kind of the contradiction, right? Like you don't want this to happen, but then they also support the communities very strongly. They give them money for local churches, for schooling, for like any kind of things that the government sometimes doesn't do,
Interesting.
the cartels does for the community. So the idea is that how can you compete as a public servant with that amount of money and power that and then we're also getting support of the locals, right? Because they get what they need from these means or illegal ways, or they have to struggle and do things differently, but then also they put a lot of things at risk. The voters too. It's not only the people who are elected.
So what you're describing really sounds like two parallel forms of government in large parts of the country or certain parts of the country where you have one democratic system where people can vote for who is in charge, but it isn't necessarily able to provide the services that people need, and another violent, autocratic, imposed system from the narco traffickers, which has a lot of money and therefore is providing some services, but these two are existing in parallel and in certain places one will be much stronger than the other. Does that sound like a fair description of it?
I think so. I remember before 2006, with the presidency of Felipe Calderón, it is said, I'm not an expert in this issue, but it is said and it is known that there was this kind of balance between the government and the narco cartels. Mm. So, for example, we have like 3-4 cartels in all the country before that, and they were in this balance between I'm not touching your business and I'm not touching your citizens or the government. But in 2006, Calderón started Reagan inspired like the war against narco traffic.
Right.
And it is said that that balance was over between the cartels and the government.
Yeah.
So cartels like the Zetas started to appear, the Templarios, which are from Michoacán, the Zetas in Veracruz, and they break that balance with the government, and they started to be a lot more violent in their ways to control the territories.
Yeah.
So yeah, of course, I think for sure. There are academics like Lorenzo Meyer, which is an historian in Mexico, that has talked about a failed state in Mexico because of this type of relationship between a narco state and the government. The elected government.
The sort of parallel system.
Yeah, because they control everything. Like, they will ask for money. If you have a little store that sells soda and chips in one corner of Michoacán, they will ask for money, which is called derecho de piso.
Yeah.
To have you pay them for security and to not get involved in violent repression. So yeah, it's really complicated, and that has raised the question within the last, I don't know, 15 years about, is it a democracy? We cannot live safely with a narco?
Well, I think you've sort of touched on something that we've skirted around but haven't really mentioned here, which is also the role of the US, right? In the 80s, there was a movement by the US, a very deliberate process of getting young academics, young men from elite families in different South American and Central American countries to go to places like Harvard and the University of Chicago to be trained in neoliberal economics and neoliberal philosophy, and then sending them back as a very deliberate policy of trying to influence the way that these democratic countries functioned and existed as a way of neoliberalizing the other parts of the Americas. So we've sort of touched on that, and now we're talking about, you mentioned the sort of Reagan era war on drugs shifted the balance in 2006, I think you said. So really there's this elephant in the room of like what role the US plays in the function and shape of Mexican democracy as well.
I would have to think a bit harder because in terms of economical interest, there's always a very strong economical interest. And I would probably put it more in that way. Like, they first think who is going to be in power that will benefit us? And, you know, like, how can we make or help this happen? Right.
Yeah.
But I honestly don't really know exactly how it happened with Obrador, because one of the things that I remember, he didn't really have a lot of support from, like, internationally speaking. It was like a random situation where he came out of nowhere. Everyone internationally was kind of like thinking he has zero experience on international policy. You know, like, it was mostly like very like country oriented, local based. I also don't know how they really work in the sense of like putting in a candidate or trying to support a candidate.
David.
I don't know if, David, you have any idea about that, because that is not super clear, either in like the national news or in the international news.
Yeah, I think we can talk about it as a shadow, for example, like the United States are a shadow of Mexican politics, because I can think about two really clear examples. Like, the narco is one example where the DEA has been really involved. There was an operation like 2 weeks ago that it was really famous because it was said that the DEA was involved, but we don't know for sure.
Right.
These are things that we are not going to know. Maybe in 20 years we will know, for example.
Right.
But another one was the immigration policy from Trump.
Of course, yeah.
Which was a clear bondage between the United States government and the Mexican government. And even the Mexican government started reinforcing the border, the south border in Mexico. So we didn't allow immigrants from Guatemala and Honduras to come through Mexico into the United States. So that types of policies or actions, I think, are more clear. But as Brenda was saying, we are not that clear about how they if, or if they interfere in Mexican elections. But as I was saying, we know that Trump was really fond into Obrador. They were like making some policies together and immigration policies and
Oh,
things
right,
like
okay.
that. But also the narco is a really clear example because we know that they have been involved in operations in these types of things, but also ideologically, like they want the country that is in the south of the border to be like calm and soothing, and they don't want interference from socialist ideas like Chavez or Cuba, things like that. For example, I remember a really great example. When Vicente Fox was in power around 2000, there was this summit. I don't remember which summit it was, but I don't know if you remember that Castro was coming into Mexico. And Vicente Fox famously said to him, you arrive, you eat, and you go away. Comes, llegas y te vas, because they didn't want him in the summit.
Well,
So,
that's interesting in comparison to the most recent summit of the Americas, which Mexico, it was in the US, right? And various countries were not invited, including Cuba and Venezuela, I think. And the Mexican president was leading the charge to boycott it. And I think in the end, several South American countries boycotted it as well, because they said there was no point having a summit of the Americas if several countries in the Americas were not invited. So that sounds like it's been a switch in the last decade or so.
Yeah, because as we know, this president, he calls himself as a left person. So he has showed support for Evo Morales, for Cuba, etc. So I don't know if Venezuela, I'm not sure, but maybe.
Do people consider him as part of, maybe he's a bit too late. What was that movement called? Like the left, big left shift in South America, particularly politics, with Evo Morales and Lula in Brazil and Chavez, of course, in Venezuela. I think maybe this guy, Alvador, is just a little bit too late to be seen as part of that shift, right?
Yes, I think so. And also, like we were saying, is the type of representation. Like we're talking about these guys who are elites trying to support the US ideologies, and then we have like something totally opposite at this point.
But it does sound like, from what you're describing, there's definitely a lot of influence on democracy from the US, but it seems more like it's a soft power kind of thing, or more subtle in many ways, or directed specifically at certain issues like immigration and narco trafficking, as opposed to the more direct, if you elect this person, we will cut all funding to your country, or like putting up candidates that you see throughout the 20th and now into the 21st century in other parts of Latin America.
And also the lining up to like economical policies from the neoliberal era in the 1990s. But we have been following those prescriptions from the International Monetary Fund and the Banco Mundial, the World Bank. So we have like a clear policy about sending stuff to the United States, sending labor force to the United States, and we are not producing anything here. So, I mean, we are following those types of normatives from international powers. So, I think that in the time that we are following that, the United States are not going to have a problem with any president in Mexico.
No
And
coup
also
for
in terms
you.
of,
You don't get a coup
Exactly.
because you're doing what you're told. That is actually where we are going to end this second of three parts about Mexico with David and Brenda. But join us for the third and final part of this conversation coming soon. In the meantime, if you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe, share, or even support us by going to the website www.democracyinpodcast.com. There you can find more information about the topics discussed today, as well as updates on what countries I'll be visiting next.